this week on the WriterCon podcast.
I always tell everyone is to write every day. I think that one's probably the best advice you gave me way back when I took your first class.
Welcome to WriterCon, a gathering place for writers to share their knowledge about writing and the writing world. Your hosts are William Bernhardt, best-selling novelist and author of the Red Sneaker books on writing, and Renee Gutteridge, best-selling author of over 30 novels and screenplays.
Hey there, writers. Thanks for joining us. As usual, I'm here with my pals Renee and Jesse. The Oscars just happened, well, a week ago, and I read an interesting statistic. Of all the films that have won Best Picture over the years, about 3/4 of them have been based upon books or plays. In other words, something a writer wrote. And yet, when did you ever see any writers on the red carpet or outside of the best screenplay categories? When were they even mentioned? This is just wrong. And Renee, you work in the film world. Doesn't this seem wrong to you?
Indeed.
Well said.
And it's true. It really is. It's an odd, coming from publishing, where obviously the writer is mentioned often, right. To the film world, where, I mean, granted, you're one of many people who are part of the team. But yeah, even when I had my book adapted for Hallmark, my name was not originally on the IMDb page for it, and I didn't have IMDb Pro at the time. Somebody went and added it at some point. I don't know who that was, but yeah, it's a strange little world of writers in Hollywood.
I'm always pro author. I think we always should get primary credit. I mean, direction, that's cool, but you know, they can't direct a blank piece of paper, right?
Well, yeah.
They have a writer first.
There's many writers who don't even get credit on the screen because they had the original screenplay. It was purchased, rewritten, and you'll never see their names. They just got money for it. So it's... They got money for
at
it.
At least.
And that's usually the outlook of the Hollywood writer is, I got paid for it, you know. So that's how they roll.
And speaking of the Oscars, Jesse, are you the only person who gets excited about who wins Best Sound?
Listen, yes. It's funny how like a hobby of mine and something I just used to enjoy and be weird about is now my job. Like no one ever told me like, yeah, there are people who just make things sound good. I'm like, if I had known that in high school, I would have started this a long time ago. But yeah, I mean, Best Sound is also one of the few categories that like sci-fi and fantasy films win at. So I've always been a fan of said category.
So. And I know some of our correspondents will be upset if I don't ask you, following up on what we've said in previous weeks, how was the Star Trek cruise?
Well, other than the fact that LA doesn't know what to do when it rains, the cruise was great. Getting on the ship was a disaster because LA's not used to forcing people inside at any point. And so there's a lot of waiting outside in the rain. So that wasn't great. But the cruise itself was delightful. As for authors,
your picture taken with the cast of Deep Space Nine.
That was the gift for signing up for this year's cruise last year. Like every year they give you like a gift. And one of them was, since it was the 30th anniversary of Deep Space Nine, they had a lot of DS9 crew on. And so we got to take a picture of them. Those poor people had to sit there for like 2 hours smiling every like 15 seconds. I felt real bad for them watching. I watched like 100 of these photos get taken place. And I'm just like, whew. That is rough. So, but they all look very happy. So,
wow. Good.
I will say the thing I enjoyed the most was one of the DS9 actors also wrote a book as his character. Andrew Robinson wrote a book as Garak, his character, one of the best Star Trek characters.
Oh, wow.
And Simon Schuster won't do a new printing of his book for some reason. So if you do have a copy of it, it's worth a lot, as is ours, which was signed by him a while ago. But they did pay to have an audiobook done of him reading it. So that'll be coming out in the summer, which I'm excited about because the book's great. So.
Mm. All right. Noted.
Yeah.
Today, our guest is Tamara Grantham, the award-winning author of a new fantasy novel called The End of Never, which is the second book in her Ithical Chronicles series. I had the pleasure of working with Tamara many years ago in some of my small group retreats, and then she started coming to the writers' conferences, and now she's a headline speaker at WriterCon because she is a superb writer with many best-selling and award-winning fantasy and science fiction novels to her credit. We'll talk to her after the news segment and a brief word from our friends at Draft to Digital.
Hi, this is Kevin Tomlinson with Draft to Digital. Ebooks are amazing, but there's just something about having your book in print. That's why we built D2D Print. We take care of you with free layout templates and formatting, and we can convert your ebook cover into a full wraparound print cover automatically. Come check out D2D Print and all the cool tools we've built for you. Find out more at drafttodigital.com.
Our first news story is actually an update on a story we covered on the last podcast, but because new information has come out, I thought we needed to revisit this. Some of you will recall us talking about romance writer Susan Meechan, whose death was announced over 2 years ago online. But then a scandal was sparked a few weeks ago when she revealed that she is very much alive. Well, it took a while, but in a series of interviews, mostly in the New York Times, she and her husband are now telling their side of the story. I'm condensing a lot of words and a lot of pages here, but the essence is Meechan saw the book world as an escape when she first became part of the community. But over time, she said it became, quote, an addiction. Her husband told the newspaper that his wife, who he says is under treatment for bipolar disorder, could get, quote, really brutal, end quote, responses to her work from other authors. And then, while Troy, the husband, was away, their 22-year-old daughter found her mother semi-conscious after having taken Xanax. Afterwards, Troy, the husband, told his daughter to announce Meechan's death. And here's a quote right from him. I told them that she is dead to the indie world, the internet, because we had to stop her, period. Even to this day, I'll take 100% of the blame, the accolades, whatever you want to call it. So that makes it almost a completely different story when you have this kind of information. But you know what, Renee, when we covered this before, you zeroed in on the mental health issues, and I think now it turns out you are exactly right. So what does this tell us about anything? The book world, social media, which we're all dependent upon now for promoting our work. What do you think?
Well, I think we've got two situations, really. I mean, bipolar disorder is a tough one. It's a tough, disease. And so I think, you know, that could be... the issues there could be triggered by anything. You know, often it's gambling or all kinds of things that somebody who suffers from this can get into. So, you know, in her case, it sounds like it was social media addiction. On the other hand, there are plenty of people who get triggered into depression due to social media. And, you know, we're all kind of learning about this and understanding this world now and trying to be sensitive to ourselves about it and really understand how much it triggers us. So, you know, I think there's really two separate issues here that sort of came together in the perfect storm. It's unclear why there had to be a fake death, I think. But, you know, sometimes when you're in a desperate situation, you have to do a desperate thing to save a loved one. So we're passing no judgment on my end for that, but it's an odd story. You don't read that every day in the headlines for sure.
Right. All right. Well, let's move on to news story two. And I'm just going to say up front, blame Renee. She's the one who brought this to my attention. And it also involves a romance novelist, this one named Felina Hopkins, who is known for her steamy tomes. You may remember a while back, someone was trying to trademark the word cocky unsuccessfully. Well, it's the same person. And she became a missing persons case in Wyoming after her disappearance. All they knew was that she drove to Wyoming sight unseen. She'd never visited that state before. Nobody knew why she went. She got her vehicle stuck in the snow near Flag Ranch while attempting to drive on a snowmobile trail. She's pulled out and sighted by Yellowstone Park Rangers. And then an hour later, she was again contacted by law enforcement because her car was observed parked in the middle of the road at Jackson Lake Junction. Hopkins sped off, fled from police for 24 miles. They eventually broke off the chase out of concerns for public safety. But she was eventually, of course, stopped and arrested, booked on 7 counts, spent a weekend in jail, was released. And then as soon as she was released, she flew to Hawaii, leaving behind both her car and her dog. So at this point, the missing persons case is over, but just 4 days ago, as we record this, she failed to make a federal court date. So 2 separate federal warrants have been issued for her arrest. Okay, Renee, knuckle down. they just get tougher. Two things everybody wants to know, right? What on earth is going on? And why is it always romance writers?
Why is it always romance writers?
And when is the Hallmark movie for this coming out?
Right.
Well, you would think it would be the crime writers or something, you know, but it's the I don't understand that part. Well, I don't understand any of this. I mean, it's, you know, it's fascinating to watch real life novelists like merge into real life crime cases. Like, that's I would love to see this on Dateline or something, but I have no explanation. I mean,
Jesse, how about you? You kind of specialize in strange. Do you have a take on this strange case?
Well, I can tell you, I think I know why it's romance writers and not like mystery and thriller writers, because mystery and thriller writers would think about this as a mystery, right? But romance novels are thinking about romantic ideas and things that like happen at the spur of the moment. And this is very much like this person is not thinking 5 steps ahead. They're barely thinking 1 step ahead. And there's something kind of weirdly romantic about like running away and then continuing to run away. Like this author just will not sit still. And
well, there's no man involved though. If she were running away for a man, it might make sense in the romance world.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in her head, she's running away from something or running to something. Yeah. We still know what that is.
Yeah, it might be a man. We don't know. A man in Hawaii. We don't know.
I mean, listen, if you're going to escape somewhere, Hawaii is not, you know, Hawaii's not bad.
Not bad at all.
We will follow up when there are further developments.
I mean, maybe fly to a non-extradition country, but, you know, Hawaii's a good second.
Then let's talk about our guest. Tamara Grantham is the author of more than 20 books and novellas, including many multi-award-winning fantasy novels for middle grade and young adult and adult readers. Many of her novels have launched as number one bestsellers. She's won 2 first place Rhone Awards, a Praiseworthy Award, and an Indie Fab Book of the Year Award for fantasy. Her brand new book is The End of Never, which is the 2nd book in her Ithical Chronicles series. And I think we've got her waiting in the wings somewhere. Jesse, I'm ready to talk to her, so engage. Tamara, thanks for being on the podcast.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Well, I think you already know this, but we have a traditional first question. So if you were going to offer writers 1 piece of advice, what would it be?
All right. Well, yes, I think I have been asked this question a few times before. And the one that I always tell everyone is to write every day. I think that one's probably the best advice you gave me way back when I took your first class. Goodness, I don't even know how many years ago. Probably 10 years ago,
at least. I was trying to think about that. And then I decided, if it was that long ago, she doesn't want me to say it. So never mind.
No, honestly, that class was probably like one of those moments in my writing career that was like a life. I hate to use the word life changing because that sounds so dramatic, but it was a writer changing event. And I think just the advice to write every day is probably, it sounds so simple, but I think it's probably one of the most important things you could do as a writer.
Mm-hmm. Why did you choose this path? What made you first pursue writing?
Well, I've been interested in writing since I was a kid. I loved stories and I loved to read. And I figured out when I was a teenager that I could write stories, that if I was reading a book and I didn't like where things were going, that I could just write my own story and create my own plot and my own characters. But it didn't work out so well when I was a teenager. I would have this image in my mind of what I wanted to create, and I would get started with it, and my characters would never get where they were supposed to go. And I would end up just getting super frustrated and just getting disgusted with the whole process and not finishing anything. And so later in life, I was at a point where I was home with three young kids and I had gotten a degree in English, but I just felt kind of creatively not able to do what I wanted to do. I was just changing diapers and right. It was just a lot of menial tasks. And I thought, you know, this would probably be a horrible time to write a novel, being the mom of three young kids, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Right. And the rest is history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that should be an encouragement to moms, because I think that, yeah, you know, the thing about becoming a mom is it's full time forever. So there is really no no good time. Might as well start when they're young and get them conditioned to the fact that you're going to disappear for a while.
That's
every
very
day.
True.
So,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, so on your path to becoming a writer, you talked about attending Bill's classes. What were some of the other steps that you took to develop the skills, even develop the networking that you needed? What were the things that you did?
Well, I have to say my husband was really involved in the whole process. I think I'm kind of he's always wanted to write a book too, but just never has. So I think he's lived kind of vicariously through me. And every Christmas he got me a big stack of books on how to write. And the first book I read was called The First Five Pages by Noah Lukeman. And I remember thinking, I've already written a novel. I don't think I need this book. But I read it anyway, and it was super eye-opening. And in the book, he kind of discusses the mistakes that writers make. First-time writers, you know, all seem to make these same mistakes. And it's kind of weird how writers in America or China, everywhere, they all seem to make these same mistakes. And I was reading it. I'm like, oh my goodness, I've made all these mistakes. And so it was very eye-opening. And of course, I went through massive revisions of that first book. It didn't get published. Neither did the second or third. But the fourth book finally got published.
Yay! Right.
So
that's awesome.
There you go. And at this point, you have written and published so many that I'm guessing you've settled into some kind of writing process. What does that look like?
Yeah.
And you don't have to say whatever I taught in those classes way back when to give us the real scoop.
Okay. I definitely have developed kind of my own routine. And this is what works for me. And I've talked to other writers who have totally different routines. But for me, I like to have a very solid outline before I jump into a book. I found that, as I said, when I was a teenager trying to write, never could get anywhere. So when I finally did sit down and think, I'm going to write a book, I said, the first thing I need to do is have a solid outline. I wrote an 11-page outline before I wrote my first book. And that's just been my thing. So every time before I write a book, I have to have at least an 11-page outline typed up. And after I type up my outline, I go and I shut my computer. I go to pen and paper and I write that same outline out. Not word for word, but if I can remember every single step that or everything, every major plot point, if I can remember every major plot point with pen and paper, then I know I've got a solid outline. If I've forgotten something, then I know that there's something in there in that outline that's not working. So
fascinating.
Yeah.
I've never heard anybody do that, but I can see the brilliance behind it.
Yeah, that's just kind of how I've come to write a book, and it's worked really well for me. So,
Well, you're kind of testing your own story in a sense, you know, and that's okay. Writers who are listening, you might steal that one. That's a pretty good one for you pantsers. I don't know what you're going to do, but outliners. That's a good tip.
Yeah. Okay, hey, it's discovery writers. Come on.
Oh, is that the I know? Or the archaeologists. We've got so many new terms these days. I'm showing my age.
I like those terms
all the time. Well, anyway, yes. So for you discovery writers, we've got to come up with a different brilliant plan. But okay, so you have a new novel. It's called The End of Never, which may I pause here and tell you how much I love that title. That is, that's a...
Oh, really, thank you.
Yeah, that's nice. That's really nice. So tell us about it.
Okay, so this is a sequel to my sci-fi novel, The Seventh Lie. I originally came up with this idea when I was watching one of those top 10 YouTube videos, top 10 weirdest places on earth. And in the top 10, they talked about this place called Champ Island, which is north of Russia. It's this little island and it's filled with these geometrically round stones. And scientists have been there. They don't know who made them. There was no signs of civilizations there. And so, of course, my writer brain starts thinking of all the possible ways this could have happened. I didn't want to do aliens, though, because I figured everybody would think, oh, you know, it's got to be aliens. So I wanted to come up with something else. That was kind of the tease is, oh, maybe it was aliens, but I wanted to do something else. So I kind of confronted that issue in the first book, The Seventh Lie. And then in the sequel, The End of Never, we've found out what's going on the island. And now we're trying to stop a world-ending destruction that is going to happen in that book. And it's called The Project. The project name is The End of Never. Basically, it means stopping something that never should have started in the first place.
Nice.
Yeah, I heard in that description, you describe this as being a science fiction novel. I know some of what you've written you consider fantasy. What do you think draws you to these genres? But Star Trek is one and not the other.
Right, that's true. And Star Wars.
And that's the other.
Yes. No, growing up, I'm a huge fantasy nerd. I love to read fantasy books, but I also love Star Trek. I love science fiction also. I think all of my books kind of blur the genre between fantasy and science fiction. If you go back and read my fantasy books, there's a good deal of what you would call science fiction in there. If I have a magic system, it's kind of also loosely based in science. And so the same with these books, with The Seventh Lie and The End of Never. They don't have a magic system per se, but there's definitely elements in there that you might call fantasy, even though I wanted to explain it with technological advancements. And so that's why I classify it as science fiction.
Well, okay. So I will confess, I've written in a lot of genres, and there are two genres that I have said to myself and others who care that I will never write, and that is historical, too much research, and fantasy sci-fi, too much world building, and things to keep up with. So what advice would you give to fantasy, let's just say fantasy writers? I mean, it's a tough genre. Like, this is not for the faint of heart.
You're right.
It's so what's your advice?
First, I would say you'd have to love it. Like, if you don't love it, then I wouldn't force it, because readers are going to know, you know, if you forced something that you're not really in love with. And I would also say you need to read a lot of fantasy and science fiction. And I think that really helps. For me personally, I love it because I get to come up with the rules and I get to create the world. And I think the world building is so fun and something that I enjoy so much. I enjoy it just as much as the character interactions and the plot. I love the world building. And usually in my books, I've never written a high fantasy. So there's always something that will bring you back to our world. To me, I feel like that's a happy medium. Like, I get to bring in the real world, which will ground readers, you know, maybe somebody who's not ready to jump into a high fantasy and, you know, learn every name on the map and every race that I've created. I feel like for me personally, as a reader, I like to be grounded in the real world just a little bit and then go and explore these other worlds that I've come up with.
So there are levels of fantasy, like,
yes.
Okay. How many are there? Is it 10 levels or?
I don't think there's a set number, but for me personally, I like to think of epic fantasy. That's like Lord of the Rings. That's set somewhere other than Earth. That's where you've got like the elves and the dwarves and the orcs and that's just the broadest fantasy that you can get. And then urban fantasy is more set in the real world with magic.
Interesting. Urban. All right.
And then you can get like really set in the real world, but with just little tiny alterations to the world. And I don't really know what you would call that. I guess you would still call that urban fantasy, but it's just a little bit, like you just have a little bit of magic in there.
So is that magical realism?
You might call it magical realism. I bet so,
Okay, all right. Yeah. Well, I might dip my toe into magical realism, but
that would be a good place to go if you want to start. Write. Yes, that would be a good Tamara, place to start.
Can we talk a minute about your characters? Because you've created some of the most original and vivid characters, including series characters in several series that I've ever seen. Where do these characters come from?
Well, first of all, thank you. I think that's a really nice compliment. I have to say I recently reread, which is weird for an author to read their own book, but I reread one of my...
No, I'm kidding.
Is it? I was bored. I had nothing else to do. I reread it and I did see a lot of like personality traits from family members and just people that I observe. And I think the characterizations come from questions I have, like trying to figure out, why is this certain family member acting this way? Like they have a problem and I don't understand why they can't solve this problem. And I think I'm just kind of getting into more of the psychology of like, where are you coming from? Where is a character? What drives them to do what they do? I never like to write characters who are all good or all bad. I like to have good characters with flaws, and even my bad characters, I like for them to have some redeeming qualities. And I've always been fascinated with kind of the psychology of how people think, what drives them to do what they do. And I think it's a really great experience for readers to understand. It gives them such a broad view of how people, when they interact with people, like to be more compassionate, to people because you never know where they're coming from. And you never know, like, you know, maybe they were rude to you that day at the store, but, you know, maybe their mom died that morning. You just don't know. So I do like to draw a lot on just the characters I find in my own life.
That's good. Well, we've already talked about your outlining methods, which I love personally, if I were an outliner. But I'm kind of curious how you organize fantasy. So it's got to take a little bit more than just outlining a plot. Do you have a special way or a special program or an app or something you organize everything in?
I don't have like a special program. I always just use Microsoft Word. But when I go to outline a book, I have to know, like I have to know. One of the things that is weird when I first started writing, I got into this point where I didn't know what the police force would be. Like they go to this city in this kind of fantastical world and the guards rush up. But I didn't realize like, okay, who's in charge of the guards? What are the guards wearing? What kind of weapons do they have? It's, you know, it's just things like as a reader, you just kind of expect those things on the page. But as an author, you actually really need to know, like, it starts with the guard, but then it goes up into like the political system. And so I always like to have when I write my outline, I like to have like the government system. I need to know how it works. I need to know the land. I usually draw just a crude map of my own. When I was writing The Seventh Lie, I got a map of Champ Island, which is the island with all the strange looking rocks. And I put a paper up on my computer screen and I just drew the outline of Champ Island. And I separated it into the different areas of agriculture that I needed for my book. When I was writing my 7-book Fairy World MD series, the world that they're in looks like Pangaea. So I just did an outline of Pangaea, which is Earth's continents all formed together. And I just made up my own outlines and boundaries for the world in that. And I think having a map visually, you can see the map. And I think that helps a lot in just figuring out where the geography and such of the world is going to be.
Wow. I am impressed.
Thank you.
So one last question, Tamara. What's coming up from you next?
Oh, goodness. You know what? I have so many projects.
Okay. What are you working on now?
I am currently working on a middle grade fantasy. It is called Don't Blame the Chosen One, which is the sequel to my middle grade fantasy called The Not So Chosen One. It is definitely a funny spoof of the hero's journey, and I definitely poke fun at all the tropes in the hero's journey. So I'm having so much fun. When I first started writing, I thought I would never like to write for a middle grade audience, but recently I've noticed I've been reading a lot of middle grade books, and I thought, well, maybe I should just see what happens with the middle grade.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm working on that currently. I'm lucky that I was able to go to a writing retreat just this past weekend, and I got 10,000 words at the retreat. So I was glad to get that. Middle grade is fun also because I feel like you can really delve into like how a teenager thinks, which is, I have teenagers, so that's what I really need help with.
Tamara, thanks so much for being on the podcast. Come again soon, okay?
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
I may have mentioned last time that I have a new novel coming out. Well, it's out. You can get The Florentine Poet anywhere you normally get or order your books. It's a fun and fanciful historical tour of Renaissance Italy. Okay, that's making it sound too much like a college class or something, but it's the story of what one man will do to pursue his passions, which in this case are poetry and true love. so I hope you'll give it a look. We're taking registrations now for the WriterCon Small Group Retreat, which will be July 19th through 23rd at the Stonecastle Convention Center in Branson, Missouri. This is 5 days of, let me tell you, intensive work with a class of no more than 8 people, 8 writers. There's teaching, editing, feedback, mentoring, and, you know, maybe a lot of fun too. Space is obviously limited, so if you're interested, please visit the WriterCon website or email me at willburn@gmail.com. That's willburn@gmail.com. All right. Don't forget, my pal Renee Gutteridge is also busy writing, just finished a film. And Renee, what are you going to do next?
Well, I'm in the middle of a book right now that, a nonfiction book. It's really interesting. I'm actually excited to start talking about it, but I can't talk about it yet. So.
Oh, okay. Next time. Yeah. All right, everybody. Until next time, keep writing. And remember, you cannot fail if you refuse to quit. See you next time.